All right, let's go to Luke. Luke, we're going to finish up our red letters today. And hopefully get into some black ones. In Luke chapter 22, we've covered almost all of the little red letters. We had one. There was one that I was hoping to get and had to save it for this week. Luke chapter 22. And it's actually going to be in verse 37, but we'll get a running start into it. Let's start from verse 31. This is when Jesus is together with the 12. I believe that Judas was still here at this point in time, but not exactly sure how that one fits in. Haven't looked at it. But they've had their little disagreements about who's the greatest. They've had a little foot washing, all that kind of stuff. And so in verse 31, he says, "Simon, Simon, behold, Satan has demanded permission to sift you like wheat. But I have prayed for you that your faith may not fail. And you, when once you have turned, strengthen your brothers." And he said to him, "Lord, with you I am ready to go both to prison and to death." And he said, "I say to you, Peter, the cock will not crow today until you have denied three times that you know me." And he said to them, "When I sent you out without purse and bag and sandals, did you not lack? You did not lack anything, did you?" They said, "No, nothing." And he said to them, "But now, let him who has a purse take it along, likewise also a bag, and let him who has no sword sell his robe and buy one. For I tell you that this which is written must be fulfilled in me, and he was numbered with transgressors, for that which refers to me has its fulfillment." And they said, "Lord, look, here are two swords." And he said to them, "It is enough." Okay, the actual quote is, it says he was numbered with the transgressors. Let's go back to Isaiah 53, which is where that's from. Isaiah 53. And Luke 22, that actual quote there is something that for quite a while puzzled me. To try to figure out exactly what it was talking about. But I think I got it together for you, so let's see. Isaiah 53, and it's actually in the last verse, verse 12. Isaiah 53, the whole thing is just a detailed prophecy about Jesus' death. Includes then his burial and his resurrection. Talks about him, you know, being led as a sheep, or like a lamb that's led to slaughter. You know, you've got the whole deal of being pierced through for our transgressions, all that kind of stuff. So it's lots of great stuff. And it actually is one of the places, I think I've told you this before, that I've actually sat down with Muslims. They've read through it, and you get to the end and say, "Okay, who's that about?" And they go, "Jesus." Of course, then you get to tell them the dating on it, and that kind of blows their mind. But it's an excellent passage. Well, you get down to verse 12. He says, "Therefore, I will allot him a portion with the great, and he will divide the booty with the strong, because he poured out himself to death and was numbered with the transgressors. Yet he himself bore the sins of many and interceded for the transgressors." Okay, now, here's that little quote where it says, he was numbered with the transgressors. Now, in this context, you're looking at it and going, okay, looks like it's stuff having to do with his death. Poured out himself to death, numbered with the transgressors, bore the sins of many. All that seems like maybe the cross type stuff. But when you get to Luke, it kind of throws a kink into things. Just context. You know, one of the things that is important is to look at things in their context. But you've got to make sure that you look at it also in the context of the whole Bible. You know, a lot of times, you know, I've I've studied with some people sometimes where you know, you're taking them to this verse, or you're taking them to that verse, and you get to the verse, and they've gotten it drilled, you know, whether from some other religious affiliation or whatever, they've gotten it drilled into their head. You got to get it in context. And so they'll start back, you know, several verses before and read all the way through so they can get it in context, which is fine. On Luke 22, though, that's going to, it does throw a little confusion into the matter if you just stick to the context of this one passage. I'll show you why. Back over in Luke 22, he's had the discussion about Simon being tested and or Peter being tested. Peter's going to deny him. And then verse 35, he tells him, you know, when I sent you out with nothing earlier on, he told him, go to the villages, go to these places, and don't take anything with you. Don't take a bag. Don't take an extra tunic. Don't take gold or silver. You just get to a house. You get there. You seek out who's worthy. You stay with them until they no longer want you to stay with them, or until you're done preaching there, and then you move on. And so in this case, he's saying, you know, and he told them that the laborer is worthy of his hire. So in that case, he expected that when they went out through these villages of the Jews as little itinerant preachers who are actually performing some miracles and some signs, that they should have been welcomed. And there should have been some hospitality, some good old Jewish hospitality for them. And that's what they should live on. And so that's what they did. They saw all kinds of great things go on. He also told them if there wasn't any place worthy, he should shake the dust from their feet and kind of leave that place behind. Well, in this case, he says, when you guys did that, did you lack anything? And they said, no, nothing. So, but now he's going to tell them something a little different. Verse 36, he said, now, him who has a purse, take it along. Also a bag. And if you don't have a sword, sell your robe and buy a sword. Which I guess, what, did you guys see the headline? Was that a day or two ago? Was that Friday's headline? No, it had to be yesterday's because they didn't give me Thursday's and Friday's papers. So I don't know. So it must have been yesterday's headline that people are now, like the gun sales have like skyrocketed since the election. Gee, I wonder why that would be. some people taking Jesus' advice here, maybe. But he tells them, if you don't have a sword, sell your robe, go buy one. Then, verse 37, he says, for I tell you that this which is written must be fulfilled in me, and he was numbered with transgressors. For that which refers to me has its fulfillment. And so their response is, well, look, here we have two swords. He says, it's enough. For a while, I was befuddled by this. It's a good word. And part of the reason was I was trying to figure out, okay, if you just go straight context, he's talking about swords. He's talking about, you know, tells him to go buy a sword, says he'll be numbered with the transgressors. And right after that, they say we have two swords. And he says, okay, that's enough. You know, and you go on further to see what those swords were used for, and they're used in the garden. Peter chops off an ear, and Jesus super glues it back on. and then, you know, and so for a while I kind of thought, well, is that what it's referring to? Is that he was numbered with the transgressors? Is that the whole deal? But like I said, if you just look right there, it's going to be pretty tough to figure out what he's talking about. I mean, kind of get an idea, but why did he quote this? Go over to Mark chapter 15. And this is why I said you got to take, you can't just take it in the context of the passage it's in. You've got to take it in the context of the whole Bible. And that sometimes, it does make things challenging. You know, sometimes you've got two extremes. You have the extreme that the Catholics have gone to and, okay, just about everybody else has gone to, and that is you have to either be a priest, or the Protestant version of that is a Bible college graduate at the very least. But if you can get a master's or doctorate, then you're better off to really be able to understand the Bible. And so you have that extreme where only these select few can actually understand the Bible. On the flip side of it, you've got the more Pentecostal version of things that everyone can understand the Bible just, you know, randomly pop, and take out of it whatever you want out of it. And so, you know, it doesn't need a great degree of study. You can just, you know, just read whatever you get there, and whatever you get out of it and I get out of it, it's okay. You're going to have your interpretation of it. I'm going to have my interpretation, and we're all fine and dandy. So you've got the two extremes. The Catholic version of this is the only accepted, you know, only your priesthood can interpret what the Bible means for you. Or you've got the other side of it where anyone and everyone's interpretation is fine and dandy. And then you got the truth somewhere in the middle. Okay. Do you have to have a Bible college degree to be able to understand the Bible? No. In fact, based on my experience, I would say having a Bible college degree might actually harm you in understanding the Bible some. It moves you in the opposite direction many times. I remember when Jennifer and I first got married, I do have a Bible college degree, and we get into discussions. Don't tell anybody. But we would get into discussions, and she would say something that I just thought, that goes totally contrary to anything I had ever heard before, because I had a Bible college degree. And so then I would have to go back but knowing that she came from Montana and having high regard for what was being taught out here, I would go back and say, okay, now why is she saying this? And I'd start checking things out, and I actually found out that she was right most of the time. And what I had learned in Bible college was wrong most of the time. So I actually had to do a whole lot of relearning. So that's a side note. But the point that I'm making, though, is the truth of understanding the Bible is somewhere in the middle. And that is, yes, you can understand the Bible. Anyone can understand the Bible. But sometimes it's going to require some work. And the more familiar you get with it, the more reading you do of it, the more study you do of it. And that doesn't require a Bible college degree. It just requires you to get into it on your own. The more you get into it on your own, the more you're going to be able to put things together. Remember a study, Tom, you might remember this. It's been several months ago. We were studying something. We were talking about Galatians chapter 2. And there was some section in Galatians 2 he wasn't getting. And so I started to explain to him what it was. And he just kind of looked at me and said, where are you getting that? And so I went back and I kind of showed him. And he said, somebody had to have told you. Who told you that? You know, where'd you get that from? Somebody had to tell you this. And what it was, I think the thing we were discussing was in Galatians chapter 2, where Acts 15 fits into all that. And kind of, you know, so we're talking Galatians 2. And I said, okay, now this goes back to Acts 15. He went, okay, now where does it say that? You know, where's that in there? You know, and the point was, he said, sometimes you, referring to me, and he said, Mr. Wilson especially, he says, you guys will say things. I'm going, where'd that come from? How did you get that? And really all it comes from is a lot of reading and study. I know a bunch of you other guys do that too, is where you can put things together because you've gone through it and you've gone through it and you've gone through it. And if you've read through the Bible a whole bunch of times, every time you start picking out new things, right? Is that can I get some nods or something from, okay. But every time, thanks, Tom. But every time you get some new things. Okay, well, this is one of those kind of situations where you do have to put some things together. You know, as you're reading through, it is important. You know, the more you study, the more things are going to make sense. The more things are going to fit together. You know, I'll allow all this information to remain anonymous, but I was sat in on a Bible study with somebody. And he was going through some material that he uses with new Christians and his, you know, like brand new Christian type stuff. And his brand new Christian type stuff was like a ton of the Old Testament history and dates and times and places. And I thought at the time, I just thought, yeah, I'm sure that about 90% of that's going over the person's head. And they're not getting the point of it anyway. You know, it wasn't new Christian time. Now, was it important material? Yeah. I mean, is there a time to know the kings? Is there a time to know the kingdoms? Is there a time to know the dates? Is there a time to know the destruction of the northern kingdom of Israel, 721, 722 BC. Is it their time to know, you know, when the Babylonians came into Babylon, like 605 BC, and then the whole final destruction, 586. And I'm just, in a sense, messing with you some, but is there a time to know all those dates and times and how that all? Sure. There's definitely a time. I wouldn't exactly throw it into the brand new Christian class or anything, or, you know, when you're sitting down at the Bible study with somebody who's new, I wouldn't necessarily go into them, but there is a time for it. You know, there is a time to go through that stuff, to be able to put all of that together. But a lot of it's going to come on when you, on your own, start going through things and start checking things out. And after you've gone through it several times, and then you'll start getting things together. Point. Just looking at Luke 22 in its little passage, it's going to look like it's got something to do with those swords, the transgressors. What exactly is he talking about? And to say that it's about him on the cross is kind of a little bit of a stretch unless you look at everything else. In Isaiah 53, it did look like, yeah, that would probably be something to do with his death on the cross. Go over to Mark, if we should be in Mark 15. Mark 15. Let's start from verse 22. And they brought him to the place Golgotha, which is translated place of a skull. And they tried to give him wine mixed with myrrh, but he did not take it. And they crucified him and divided up his garments among themselves, casting lots for them to decide what each should take. And it was the third hour when they crucified him. And the inscription of the charge against him read, "The King of the Jews." And they crucified two robbers with him, one on his right and one on his left. And the scripture was fulfilled, which says, "And he was numbered with transgressors." Well, now that one's pretty clear. You know, you don't get much clearer than that, where it says they crucified him with two robbers, one on his right, one on his left, and the scripture was fulfilled. He was numbered with the transgressors. Okay, now that fits. That seems like it fits. Isaiah 53, it looked like it would have been talking about his crucifixion. Mark 15, Mark just makes it nice and simple and easy for us. It was talking about it, and specifically, it's talking the manner of death and the fact, you know, here he's numbered with transgressors. He's hanging up there with two thieves. Okay. Very clear, very specific. Now we go back over to Luke and say, use that to help understand what he's talking about in Luke 22. Because in Luke 22, it almost comes as a random thought. Have you ever had random thoughts, by the way? Was that one right there? Drives my wife crazy. Because I don't know if any of the rest of you do this, but you can be thinking down a certain line, a train of thought, and then I'll just, you know, I'm thinking about something and I'll say something to my wife, and she just looks at me like I'm crazy. Because she was not on that train at all. She was on, you know, she's totally different conversation, totally different stuff going on. She hasn't, you know, she's not thinking down that line, and it can be something just totally out of the blue. And she'll just look at me and say, "What are you talking about?" And I'll have to think back through and realize that all the things that were going on in my head, none of them were said. It was just that last little phrase, you know, and I don't know, I guess maybe I've accepted that women can read men's minds, and so, you know, I don't need to, but Jesus' words here almost seem like one of those random, out-of-the-blue kind of thoughts. When he says, you know, he's talking about, bring a purse, take it along, a bag, take that along. If you have a sword, if you don't have a sword, sell your robe, buy a sword. For I tell you, that which is written must be fulfilled in me, and he was numbered with transgressors. For that which refers to me has its fulfillment. Okay, the context is buying the swords. So what's that got to do with being numbered with the transgressors? Why buy swords? Why? What? How does that fit in? See, we get the explanation from Isaiah and then specifically from Mark that numbered with the transgressors is talking about Jesus hanging on the cross between two thieves. That's specifically what that's about. Now, what's that got to do with these swords? Did he just have a random thought and throw it out there? Tom.
Could it be that his crucifixion ushering in the new covenant is when the persecution of the church really started?
Ooh. See, you're thinking. That's good. That was not random. That's good. Yeah, I think Tom's totally on the right track there. Look back to where what he's saying. He's talked about Peter's denial of him. Why did Peter deny him? Yeah, he's scared. He did have a sword. He used it. It didn't go too well. Peter was scared. Yeah. So he's referred to Peter's denial of him. And then he says, when I sent you out before, did you lack anything? You know, he sent him out basically with nothing and said, when you went out before, you could go out with nothing and people took care of you. He's letting them know that ain't the way it's going to be anymore. Times are a-changing. You know, was there a day in America when you could go traveling around and not have to think about locking doors and not have to think about your safety? Was there that day? Are we still in that day? No. No, you know, when I first came back from Ghana, I locked my vehicle all the time. And then my little key fob stopped working, and so I didn't lock it as much because if I don't do it exactly in the right combination of unlocking things, it sets off a security alarm. That's the truth. I don't know why it is. It's a nice security system. But so I stopped locking it some. But you know what? There are still certain Bible studies that I go to that I lock my vehicle when I go into the study. Some neighborhoods I'm not quite as concerned about, but others I definitely lock my vehicle. And that's in Bozeman, Belgrade. You know, are the times changing? Sure. In Ghana, we felt very safe, you know, especially like Sunyani and that kind of stuff. We felt very safe there. But the last year or so that we were there, things were changing. Not too far from where we were at, they found gold in large quantities. We didn't find any of it, but they did. And so there's an American gold mining company out of Denver. Do you remember the name? Newmont. Newmont. Major gold mining company out of Denver, Newmont, that's mining large quantities of gold not far from where we lived. And so consequently, they brought in lots of Americans. So there was a time period when Jennifer and I were like, there may have been a dozen lightly colored people, you know, because we don't want to sound racist or anything here. Now, there are about a dozen white people in the whole town of 60,000. So, but it was calm, it was peaceful, and most of the people who were there were either Peace Corps, who don't have any money, or missionaries, who don't have any money. You know, so it really wasn't a big deal. But with all this gold mining stuff starting to crop up, you could easily find 100 white people running around town on any given day. Most of which would have been in some way affiliated with all the gold mining, who did have money. And so at a point in time when everyone had known who we were and knew that we didn't have any money, you didn't have anything to be concerned about. But going to Sunyani now, if we were to live in Sunyani, it was getting to the point when we left, if we were to have continued there, we would have had to hire full-time security at our house. We would have had to have full-time security at our house and still wouldn't have been guaranteed anything. Just to deter the ones who were not so serious. The really serious ones, even security doesn't do anything. But the ones who are not so serious thieves. So, you know, times change. You know, and so at that point in time, there was the first several years I was in Ghana, I didn't even own a gun. The last, after getting my arm chewed on, I decided that a gun might be a good idea. And so the last several years, I had a gun. If I were to continue, I would have had to have had full-time security, which Jeff Hostetter does have full-time security or nighttime security. And he's got a gazillion people running around in the daytime, so that tends to deter people. Okay, but the point is, times change. Jesus is saying, hey, guys, times are changing. Up to this point, I've been fairly popular. And up to this point, no one's, you know, you guys could go and people would welcome you. Oh, you're a disciple of Jesus. You can perform some miracles. That's great. He says, I tell you, that which is written must be fulfilled in me, that he was numbered with transgressors. Jesus is going to hang on that cross as a criminal. His reputation is now gone. He died as a criminal, hanging between two thieves. And from that point on, things changed. You know, the freedom that they had to go about just as good old Jewish boys having a good time changes. And that's what he's getting them ready for is, hey, those nice peaceful times where everybody else will take care of you and you can be just seen as part of everyone else, that's changing. Kind of like Tom was saying, the new covenant's going to get ushered in here with my death. And you're going to be, the reputation that you're going to have is not going to be so wonderful. Which, just a side note. Go ahead, Rob.
So you're saying it's physical swords. It's not the sword of truth. It's not the Old Testament and the New Testament. It's actual swords.
I think it's actual swords that he's talking about there. Yeah. Because he says, sell your robe and buy one. And when they say there are two swords, he says, yeah, it's enough. But those things change. I mean, you look, you have a similar example when Paul, when they do the big collection to take back to Jerusalem. Paul and you have several guys who are traveling with that collection as protecting that. Mr. Wilson's pointed this out too, and you can check it out through the Book of Acts. But you got to get the other gospels or the other letters and stuff to tie it all together. But you've got the guys who are traveling with the money, and you've got Paul, and they're kind of crisscrossing paths. They don't all travel together the whole time, because Paul knows the kind of heat that's going to come his direction, and so he's got to distance himself from this money that's headed there, but still keep contact with the guys. So they actually, when they're heading back, he heads back separately. They get to Troas. He goes by land. They go by sea. They meet up again. And that's pretty much the way they take it back to Jerusalem. So what's that? It is pretty interesting. Mr. Wilson pointed it out. I'm not going to take credit for it. I'll give credit where credit's due. So, but yeah, I do think that that's talking about physical swords in that sense. Because he's just letting them know, hey, time's changing here. So anyway, he was numbered with the transgressors in that sense. You know, if you just yank it in the context, look at it right there, it's not gonna make a ton of sense. You've got to get the other locations. You got to get it clearly defined what the transgressors, being numbered with the transgressors, is, and then look at it in its context. So, Fred, I'll come from behind.
I was thinking too that it, to a certain degree, what you're talking about there's perspective, the perspective of the people that the people have there, and. I was thinking too that it's also kind of a lesson for the apostles. I mean, prior to this, he's basically said, you know, put your faith in God, trust in God, and He's going to take care of you, and that's very true. But when he tells them to go buy a sword, in some respects, he's saying, but don't be stupid. You know, the way people look at you, are going to have a big impact on your ability to be able to effectively put forth the gospel. And so we have to think about not only what the Jewish and Christian perspective was, but the perspective of the people in general were. It's just like in our society, why do people respect a police officer? Is it his uniform? Is it his badge? Well, the bottom line is he carries a gun, you know. And so you're going to have to, you know, you have to look at the perspective of the people around you all the time.
By the way, side note with the police officer thing, part of it is too that there's still the consciousness or the idea in America that those are the guys that are helping out and they're doing helping people to do what's right. In Ghana, they carry guns, but nobody respects the police. And that's what I'm saying. It's changing. Yeah, it's changing here as well. Right there. Oh, perspectives. We'll make sure we don't get that one on tape for you, all right? You know, see.
Sam Jones.
Go to Nehemiah for a minute, please. Kind of along with what Fred's saying there. Nehemiah chapter 4. Yes.
I have been, I've asked about this, had conversations about this before. And it has also been told to me that we are to respect authority. So if authority comes to your door and says, give me your guns, we're supposed to give our guns. Now, that's contrary to protecting yourself. So how does that all fit in?
Yeah, you're supposed to give them your guns. You give them the inside parts first, and then afterwards. And you, no, just kidding. No. Yeah. No. Nehemiah chapter 4. I will get that. I will get to it. Nehemiah chapter 4. Here, they're rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem. They're working on it. They face some opposition, and actually have heard some rumors that they're gonna get attacked while they're working. So, let's pick it up in verse 12. It says, and it came about when the Jews who lived near them came and told us 10 times, they will come up against us from every place where you may turn. Then I stationed men in the lowest parts of the space behind the wall, the exposed places, and I stationed the people and families with their swords, spears, and bows. When I saw their fear, I rose and spoke to the nobles, the officials, and the rest of the people. Do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord, who is great and awesome, and fight for your brothers, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your houses. You know, Nehemiah tells them, remember the Lord, and then he says, fight. You know, that you've got both sides of it. When I told you earlier that I at one point invested in a gun in Ghana, and it became my habit. I loaded it every night. I unloaded it every morning. And it was just, it stayed by my bed at night. You know, that was my habit. But you know what? I had a single shot shotgun, 12 gauge shotgun, which was nice, but single shot. No, I got pretty quick with it. You know, I could, you'd load it every night. You'd, you know. But lots of times when the armed robbers would come to places, they had managed to get either the AK-47s or the M1s, M1s, the AK-47s from the police, the M1s from the soldiers. Somehow, go figure how the armed robbers, the thieves, could get the guns that nobody else could get. And Ghana does have gun control, by the way. But with my single-shot shotgun, would I have had any chance against an AK-47 or an M1? Well, actually, our house is built pretty cool because you had a little, on our balcony, it had a little hole about this big that would have been perfect, and it was right at the gate. But, you know, I thought through every scenario possible that in case something happened. But, you know, in the end, you do what you can. And I knew that me having the gun would deter anyone who was not really serious. But anyone who was really serious, I knew that they would still manage to get in. And so that's, so we would, I would load my gun and pray. That was pretty much, ultimately I realized my security ultimately depended on God. And that's, you know, kind of where Fred was going with that too. But, and that's what Nehemiah, he's going, okay, you don't be stupid, do what you can, but in the end, it depends on God. So, in answer to yours from earlier, you know, what do you do? Some of that, I think you're going to have to wait till you get to that situation to determine what will be the best course of action.
So I'll make this quick. I mentioned a bit ago my dad was a police officer, and back in the 60s they had the riots in Ann Arbor. And my dad was 6'4". He only weighed about 240, but he was tall. And him and another officer, much smaller than him, were in front of the university building, and there was a group of about 15, 20 hippies wanting to storm that building. It was their job to keep them out. Well, they all kept coming forward, and the other officer wanted to go inside. My dad said, hold your ground. And when they got real close, my dad told them, you're going to get in this building. You're going to overpower the two of us. But the first one of you, I'm going to hurt. And that first one stepped forward, and he cracked him in the head, knocked him out with one punch. The rest of them picked him up and walked away. So the point of that is, in this context, whatever it is that you do, be smart about it, act hard on it, and that will deter the first one through the door.
Of course, if they have little labels on their uniforms, I don't think they'll care. Sorry, I think they'll still come through the door. Let me get Mel here real quick.
How much difficulty did you have purchasing a weapon? And what weapons were available to you?
Oh, when I was in Ghana? Single-shot shotguns. And if you had enough money, you could have gotten a really cool five shells shotgun, 12-gauge shotgun. That's all that was available. Shotguns were what were available. And most of them were single. You could have gotten, like I said, if you had, I think it was around $500. Or might have been more than that. I don't remember exactly. But I'm thinking it was like $500-$600 for the five-shot deal. What you had to do then is once you purchased it, you had to take it down to the police station, fill out all the forms, thumbprints, fingerprints, all that, and pay money, of course. And then they would assign you an ID number, and they would engrave it in the stock of the gun. So they engraved the ID number on the gun, and every year you had to pay a renewal. Every 6 months or every year, you had to pay a renewal fee with that. If you ever chose to sell the gun, then you had to take that person down to the police station and transfer ownership at the police station. That's gun control. Guess what? All the thieves had pistols. They all had handguns. Where'd they get them? They could either make them or which the handmade ones were kind of scary. But, or they found their black market. Yeah, I mean, they found their ways to get them. Those who were really serious had the good ones. They all had handguns. And, or they would get guns from the police, because a lot of times the police were in with the armed robbers too. So thieves were not stopped from getting their guns. They got them still. It was just the honest people who didn't. Anyway, that's just, you know, I 2 years ago when we moved here, I told some people that my purpose, one of my purposes was to teach you all how to live under socialism. So it's coming true. So we'll have some lessons later on, the details about how life will be. But as far as, Tom, your question, I think you're just going to have to wait till those times start coming. And you got to make a choice based on what you believe is going to be most pleasing to God. So, let me finish this. Let's go back to Luke 22. The point from Nehemiah was the same thing that Jesus is making there in Luke 22, and that is, ultimately, as Fred had pointed out, their faith was in God, but he's also telling them here, be aware that times are changing and be ready for what you can be ready for. You know, Hebrews, Tom, back to your deal, Hebrews chapter, I'm thinking 12. Maybe it talks about they joyfully accepted, it might be 11, joyfully accepted the seizure of their property, which was government seizure. So you actually do have cases then when government was seizing it and they were described as joyfully accepting that. They take your gun so they can take your car. Well, good, they can get them both at the same time. That's kind of you to make it convenient for them. But Jesus says here, you know, in Luke 22:36, he says, or before that, he says, before you went out, it was calm, it was peaceful, it was easy. It's not going to be that way anymore. And so just get ready for it. And there will be, you know, there would be times when they would need those swords, and he intended for them to use them. But his main point here is times are changing. I'm going to be numbered with the transgressors. I'm going to be hanging on this cross. There are going to be two thieves hanging on either side of me. I'm going to be numbered with the transgressors, and you're going to be lumped in with that too. So, and who knows? If it happened then, that may be what we're headed toward as well. But the point ultimately is your faith still comes down to being in God. You do what's smart, you be smart, but your faith ultimately has to rest in God. He's the one that does take care of us.